Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm Paul Vogelsang. My guest today is Susie Boggess. Susie Boggess will be performing live at the Tally Ho Theater in Leesburg, Virginia, May 28th.
The Tally Ho was a big surprise to us the last time we played there, and I couldn't wait to get back, honestly. It was one of those things where you could feel the room was already alive.
Susie has been recording music for over 25 years, and fans of the Not Old Better Show will appreciate Susie's musical roots, her great outlook on life, and her beautiful voice. From her earliest years, growing up in Aledo, Illinois, Susie Boggess loved music. She joined the church choir at age 5, played the piano and drums, and bought her first 12-string with the money she earned from babysitting. She moved to Nashville in the mid-80s and paid bills by singing demos by day and performing 3 nights a week at a local rib joint. Now, more than a dozen albums later, 2 million copies sold, and awards ranging from the Academy of Country Music's Top New Female Vocalist to a Horizon Award and a Grammy for the Best Traditional Folk Album, Susie Boggess is still recording. Her latest album, according to Rolling Stone magazine, is one of the 26 albums you probably didn't, but really should hear. Lucky is Susie's latest, which was recorded with her husband, songwriter and esteemed recording engineer, Doug Kreider. The album Lucky honors legendary songwriter Merle Haggard and includes such favorites as Silver Wings, Tonight the Bottle Let Me Down, and Today I Started Loving You. Susie sings all of these songs in her live shows, and they're a real passion of hers.
My biggest passion is just finding a melody that matches my voice and trying to lay it down and get people to react to the stories. And in our business nowadays, live music is really how we make our living. So for me, it's all about the connection between me and the audience, and these songs really deliver that.
Susie's fans have been listening to her now for a quarter century, while others first clued in to her recent independently produced albums, American Folk Songbook, Sweet Danger, and Swing. Some of Susie's fans, 964 in fact, contributed money to make and promote Lucky through a Kickstarter campaign, and the entire project was funded through fan support.
I went to longtime supporters and asked them for help, and man, did they ever turn out, and they gave us everything we needed to get started.
You can find out more about Susie, her music, and her upcoming tour schedule at SusieBoggess.com. Today, join me in welcoming singer-songwriter Susie Boggess.
Welcome to the Not Old, Better podcast. It's time for this week's featured guest on the Not Old, Better podcast. And now your host, Paul Vogelsang.
Welcome to Susie Boggess. I know, Susie, you're going to be here in Northern Virginia on May 28th at the Tally Ho Theater. That's in Leesburg, Virginia.
Right.
Good. Well, we're excited to see you, and certainly we're looking forward to it. What can we expect from the show? I know you're going to be kind of starting that summer tour and
right.
bring a band along and play for us.
Yeah, you know, the Tally Ho was a big surprise to us the last time we played there, and I couldn't wait to get back, honestly. It was one of those things where you could feel the room was already alive. You know, it's like it wasn't going to be a hard sell to get them excited that night. So.
Right.
I just kind of threw my set list out the window, and we just started out kind of just rowdy, and it just really kind of went all over the place. It was just a wonderful night, and I'm hoping that we'll have a similar kind of group there for this show. It was just one of those things where I had never played there before. It's a great old theater, you know, and it's just got this really kind of funky vibe to it. It's really taken care of well and everything, but I just mean that you feel like some of the shows that have been played there, some of the best shows that have been played there are still hanging around somehow in the rafters, you know, so it just is a great place to play. And I'm really looking forward to it.
It is a really nice theater. I think it's nice because it's got that real close kind of feel. You know, we get to be right there with you.
Right. And, you know, like I say, it's just very spontaneous, and it feels like the audience is really there for the music, and they're charged up and they're ready to interact. You know, it's not like I'm playing at them. It's like we're playing together and having fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope it does get a little rowdy. I really have been a longtime fan, and I enjoy your music. I really love the album Lucky. I know you recorded that with your husband, Doug Kreider, a songwriter in his own right and an esteemed engineer. So that's going to be great to kind of hear a little bit from that. I'm sure you'll play a little bit from that album.
Sure. I mean, it's all songs that were written by Merle Haggard. So, you know, this has been a kind of a rough year. I mean, 2016, for some reason, man, we've been just losing a lot of icons. And Merle's always been one of my favorites, and, you know, ever since I was a little kid. So this was kind of a labor of love. And I even called Merle ahead of time to make sure that he was okay with me doing his songs. And I didn't want him to feel like I was trying to steal all his material, because he was out performing when I recorded it. And I didn't want him to feel like I was trying to say, you get off the road and let me do your stuff. I wanted him to know that I was just really wanting to highlight what a great songwriter he is. I mean, you know, I'm so sorry. I can't get that in my head yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just the fact that he writes these songs that are just so universal that it doesn't matter what gender is singing them. They're just, you know, they're just so human and great stories and great melodies to sing. And that's still my biggest passion, is just finding a melody that matches my voice and, you know, trying to lay it down and get people to react to the stories. And in our business nowadays, live music is really how we make our living. So for me, it's all about the connection between me and the audience, and these songs really deliver that.
I found a lot of connections to you from the Kickstarter page that supported the album Lucky. And I imagine you were touched too. Just some beautiful thank yous to you for this music and your nod to Merle and to your lovely voice, and how it really is a great combination with his music and your voice.
Well, the whole Kickstarter thing was just the best boost anybody could ever get, because it really was like, this was one of those albums that really needed some help to get it out to the public, and I needed to hire some big guns. And I don't, you know, we're a cottage business now. So, you know, I'm not on a major label or anything. We just make our own records here. So I went to the longtime supporters and asked them for help. And man, did they ever turn out and really, really, you know, they gave us everything we needed to get started and to be able to do those promotional plugs where you have to go to New York and take the band, and you have to go to LA and take the band. And it costs a lot of money to do that stuff. And not only that, but paying the promotion team and all that stuff. So it was just a really great feeling to have people encourage you to keep working and to keep evolving and doing your thing. And it just that's never going to go away. That time period, I love that I can still go back on my computer and read that stuff too.
Yeah, I think I counted almost 1,000 different people who had contributed. And I think it was somewhere in the range of $75,000. That is just
what
a success.
That's been amazing. And it's one of those deals where you kind of leave it open, so people were getting different kinds of, I guess they called them incentives or something like that, but it was different packages, so they could buy the CD signed, or they could get a t-shirt, or they could do all different things. But I sold 60 sets of handwritten lyrics that were framed, and that ended up being really kind of the one that set us up over the edge there so that we could fund everything. That was so great.
Yeah, I was so impressed. I think that's such a great success story for you. And I think you kind of referred to this, but, you know, as a self-published, you know, artist in the era of iTunes and social media, these have been big changes and big differences in the music industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you notice most about the music industry today that's changed from when you kind of first started?
Well, you know, the truth is that it's a lot like when I first started for me now. But if I had the luxury of having a huge machine behind me, you know, having been on Capitol for 12 years, that was quite a launching board, you know, to have the big machine getting me out there and having the radio airplay back in the 90s when my style of music fit right in, because there was so much, you know, the airwaves were kind of open at that point. And we had all sorts of people who had been inspired and influenced by everything from Billy Joel pop to myself, an Emmy Lou Harris fan, Linda Ronstadt and Dolly Parton, you know, these people being my heroes. So that has really helped me. But before that, I was driving around in a camper truck for 5 years, working at ski resorts and just any place, any kind of little coffee house. I did house concerts. I did all sorts of stuff for 5 years before I got the guts to move down to Nashville and compete with the big dogs. And it just took that experience. And, you know, I'm kind of a late bloomer type person. I'm not a really impulsive person. I kind of deliberate on things for a long time. So once I moved to Nashville and I started really digesting all of those 5 years of traveling around with my dog and my truck. Then I really started to write some songs that really, like, I had to do some living before I could write songs that kind of told about life, because I hadn't really done any before that, and otherwise it would have just all been conjured up stuff. But for me, you know, now, you know, when I first started out, I had to write 200 postcards every time I was going to come back to a city. Now I just write a nice note and push click, and it goes to thousands of people, and I love that.
Yeah.
My hand doesn't get as cramped. That, you know, I don't have to make as many trips to the chiropractor.
Social media does lend itself to this kind of connection that you can make with fans that's deeper.
You know, it works for a person like myself, because I'm that kind of person. I like the accessibility. Really, honestly, when I was on the tour bus and we were sequestered away and we'd do certain things, we'd do some radio interviews and we'd talk to VIPs and things like that, but then we'd have to buzz off to another town, and I enjoy the whole process of getting done with the show and talking to folks afterwards and signing whatever they got and just hearing what they have to say. Because honestly, when I first started out, some of those conversations after the show were the reason that I was turned on to somebody else's music, and it helped to shape me. And I don't want to be cut off from people so that I don't know what kinds of things move them. I want to be able to experience the things that the people come to hear me sing experience, so that I can continue to grow too and to make them happy with the music that I'm producing for them.
Yeah, certainly one of your great hits, one of my favorites, Outbound Plane, is, I think, a great story and a beautiful way that you are singing it. And I'd like to play a little bit of that, if that's okay with you. And I wonder if...
Absolutely.
Great. And maybe tell us a little bit about that song before we play it.
Well, this is a Nancy Griffith and Tom Russell song, two of my favorite songwriters in the whole wide world, two of the most poetic, Nancy's like a metaphorical genius. I mean, she's just the best at that. And Tom, of course, I don't know where he writes from, someplace in his gut, because he just knows how to turn the words so that they just sound so natural and so real. And that's one of the things I love about this song, is it sounds like a really happy little tune, but then when you get down into the lyric, you find out this is a dissatisfied person that's kind of blown off some steam.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to listen to a little bit of Outbound Plane right now by Susie Vaugus, and we'll return in just a moment.
I don't want to be standing here with this ticket for this outbound plane, because I've been here before and somehow this doesn't feel the same. Talk is cheap, so we could talk all night long. We may never figure out just where love went wrong. And I don't want to be standing here, and I don't want to be talking here, and I don't really care who's to blame. 'Cause if love won't fly on its own free will, it's gonna catch that outbound plane. Because these young people walk away from love alone to pace the floor. Young or old, I say that love is still the same. And you may walk away from love, but you'll fall head and heel again. And I don't want to be standing here, and I don't want to be talking here, and I don't really care who's to blame. 'Cause if love won't fly on its own free will, it's gonna catch that outbound plane.
We are back with Susie Vaugus. We just were listening to Outbound Plane. Susie, that's off of your Aces album. That was a gold awarded album, one of your top 10 hits, and just a great piece of music. I thought the video for that song was really a great one, too. I found that, and I loved watching it again.
Yeah, it was very fun making that video. In fact, we've been celebrating the Aces album. It's actually a platinum record, believe it or not.
It's a platinum. Great. And, congrats.
Yeah, so we've been celebrating it for the last 7 or 8 weeks, and we're doing like a a song a week from the whole album because it's going to be 25 years old come this summer. So we called it Aces 25, and then every week I write a little piece on my Facebook page and tell them about how I recorded the song, cut some, you know, crazy stuff that happened behind the scenes, and then we work in some contests, and we've done all sorts of things, like just getting people's responses, and it's been a lot of fun just to sort of go back, because, you know, a lot of people bought that record, so there's a lot of people sharing. It's been really fun.
That is great. I'll make sure to put a link to that section of your Facebook page, too, and we'll chime in as well. Yeah, of course.
All right, thanks, Paul.
Of course. So let's back up for just a second and tell us a little bit about your childhood and a little bit about your family. Is your family musical, too?
Yeah, very musical. Both of my grandmothers, my dad's mother and my mom's mother, played the piano at the theater, you know, back when people would play music down front, you know, back when they, you know, just had not, you know, the, what do you call them? I guess they were just silent movies. Yeah. So they were both really talented at that. And then my mom went into acting and that sort of thing. And then she settled down with a big family when World War II came, so she was kind of busy with us little brats at the time. So, but she always did the local theater, and we all sang in the choir, and we all played in the bands. We all did the choirs in the school and musicals, and everybody was very musical.
And I know that you worked at, and you mentioned Dolly just a little bit ago, but you worked at Dollywood. And when was that? Were you still in your teens, or were you kind of out of college?
No. I was out of college and had just moved down to Nashville. In fact, it was the first season that Dollywood was open. It was 1986. And oddly, they kind of came and found me. I was playing at a local rib joint here in Nashville. That was my first job. And they were kind of going around and listening to talent, and they offered me the job down there. And it was weird because I was just getting started singing in the studio with publishers, and that's what we call demo singing. Lots of people started doing that. Trisha Yearwood, Garth Brooks, a lot of people. What we do is we would sing songwriters' songs that they would pitch to other artists that didn't write their own songs. And a lot of times the songwriters didn't sing. So, So that's what we would do. And I was just kind of getting my foot in the door there, and I was kind of nervous about taking the gig at Dollywood, but they, you know, told me that I'd be opening concerts for her, which I did, and it was just an amazing launching board. Over 1 million people came through the park that first season.
Wow.
And, you know, I got in front of a lot of people, and I still hear from people. They'll put up pictures that they took when they were there the very first year. So I know that even aside from all the honing of my craft, just the exposure of getting in front of so many people was really good for me. And Dolly was fantastic to work for. I mean, she really was supportive. She wanted you to shine your own way. She wanted you to pick your own songs to sing. There was none of that mentality of we need to do this song and this song and this song, that kind of thing. It was really about whoever you wanted to be. And she really encouraged you to work on your own style.
I think that's so nice that some of these stars can be influences and can help guide and almost act as a little bit of a mentor.
Absolutely. And she, the other thing about her, you know, when I got my record deal, I was at Dollywood. And, you know, she took a meeting with me right away. She gave me the insights of who she knew at the label that I was getting ready to sign with. And she treated me like a little sister, you know, like just, you know, here's some pitfalls. Don't do this. Don't do that. And this man that is signing you is a wonderful man. I've known him for years, and you're in good hands. And I was there for 6 months at the park. And then when I left, when my career started on Capitol Records, so it was one of those things where she basically gave me the push out the door and said, now get out of here and go do your thing. You're ready. You know, you're ripe.
Yeah, kind of taking you under her wing a little bit. And I think that's,
those
are really helpful moments. And your long career is certainly a testament to, you know, your ability to learn that and her ability to teach. So that's really great. I also read about you. I just thought this was really interesting, Susie. And that is your degree actually is in metalsmithing, is that right?
Well, I have an art degree, but my concentration was in metals, mostly in jewelry making. I did a little bit of other stuff, but that was just sort of to try some different things, see really what really spoke to me. But mostly I've worked with gold and silver and stones and that kind of thing. So yeah, that's it's not really a major, metalsmithing is not really a major, but it was my concentration in my art degree.
I see. Well, that's great. So always an artist.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing that I didn't have to go on and try to be a drafting or any kind of painter or anything like that, because after I got to school and I started taking classes and that, you know, in high school, I felt like I was okay. But man, when I started seeing the competition in that world, I was like, oh, I'm not very good. I think I better try. I better find something else that I do pretty good. And thank goodness the singing thing worked out.
It sure has. We're going to play a little bit more of your music. We're going to play a song from American Folk Songbook. And I have to tell you, Wildwood Flower is really one of my favorites from that. Can you tell us a little bit about that song before we play it?
Well, you know, I'll tell you a little scoop on that. That song is very interesting to me. I love the Carter family. And when I was first introduced to them, I was listening to a show called A Prairie Home Companion. And a friend of mine would send me cassette tapes to Illinois, where I lived, every week after that show played, because it had not gone national at that time. Mm-hmm. And we had like a Tuesday night gathering in my little town, and we would listen to the Saturday night show all together, just sit there. Mm-hmm. And then we'd try to learn the song. And that's how I started knowing about the Carter family. And I always thought this song was so tragic. It was, you know, a really sad song about a girl who loses her lover and she's broken and she's never going to get over it. And then I found the original poem that the song had come from. And you know, in folk music, a lot of times things will sort of, you know, get shifted. You know, it's kind of like the game Telephone. You know, it's like it starts out with one story and then it goes to the next holler and then the next holler and it changes. And so by the time the Carter family were doing theirs, they kind of had a little different story than the actual poem that it was written from originally in 1860. So I love the story now, because in the original poem, she's talking about that she's lost this love and she's very sad about it, but she's now getting over it and she's putting flowers in her hair to go to a party. And she's going to the party with the intention of winning everybody there and, you know, them all thinking that she's the winner and she's charming and she's going to make him feel really bad that he let her go. And that's a good reason to like it, I think.
I think so too. Well, we're going to listen to a little bit of Wildwood Flower from the American Folk Songbook album by Susie Vaughas. And we'll be back with Susie in just a second.
I will twine mid my ringlets of raven black hair, the lily so pale and the roses so fair, and the myrtle so bright with the emerald hue, the pale amaryllis and violets of blue. I will dance, I will sing, and my life will be gay. I'll cease this wild weeping, drive sorrow away. Though my heart is now breaking, he'll never know. His name made me tremble, my pale cheeks to glow. All others above. Now another has won him, oh misery to tell. He left me in silence, no word of farewell. He taught me to love him, he called me his flower. That blossomed for him all the brighter each hour. But I woke from my dreaming, my idol was clay.
back with Susie Boggess. Susie, that song is just a favorite of mine. I know it's a favorite of many, and it sounds like it's a special one for you too. So thanks for introducing it and letting us play. And you mentioned A Prairie Home Companion. I recall the Minnesota Public Radio playing Garrison Keillor and all of those great shows from up in St. Paul, and you performed. You were on the tour for a little bit with The Prairie Home Companion, is that right?
Yeah, it was a dream come true, honestly.
Yeah.
I started working with Garrison when Chet Atkins and I were really good buddies, you know, and I made a record with Chet, and that's how Garrison, I think, became aware of me. And that's when he started inviting me to be on the show, and my first few performances were in Nashville. But then I started to go up to St. Paul and then follow him all over the place, to Charlotte and Atlanta and different places where he would just be doing the weekend show. But then they did a whole month-long tour in August of 2008 or 9, I can't remember. And I got the female slot in that, and it was just a riot. We were everywhere. I mean, we did one show. We'd do a show in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the next day we might be in New Hampshire. And of course, you know, Garrison writes his stories and stuff around the area where he is. He tailors them to each region. And so every night we'd get on this jet and we would go across the country to some other place, and he would write the next day's script at, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the rest of us would just snooze out, and you know, we get there, then we go to our hotel for a few hours and then we sleep, and then we get to the venue, and here would be the new material or the new lyrics for a, you know, a song or whatever that he'd written, and it was stitched. And I'm telling you, that guy worked harder than anybody I've ever seen in my life.
What a great time to have A Prairie Home Companion, introducing that music, having you being a part of it. That's a really wonderful, I'm sure, a really wonderful part of your career.
And honestly, that tour I did with Garrison was the whole reason I did the American Folk Songbook, because we would always do a sing-along section at the intermission, and Garrison would just lead all these people, thousands of people, and they would sing old Everly Brothers songs or Beatles or whatever, old hymns. But every time he picked an old folk song, anybody who was under 30 would just get this terrified deer in the headlights look, like, oh, I don't know that song. And I just thought it was so sad, because I, you know, where I grew up, we had music in school like 4 days a week, and it was just a big part of learning all about life. And the music book that we had gave us a little background on how the song tied into America's history. Mm-hmm. And so my husband, Doug Kreider, and I ended up doing a book to go along with the album. Mm-hmm. Specifically to give kids the sheet music so they could play along on the piano or the guitar or whatever, but also just to have the vehicle to tell people some of the stories of, like, Sweet Betsy from Pike being mm-hmm. a song about the, you know, the gold rush, or the Erie Canal and being the Industrial Revolution, or there's a little bit of everything in that record. And Garrison's the reason that I did it, was because I wanted to make sure that that was getting passed along.
That's really wonderful. And nice to hear that about Garrison. But I know that you do participate in charities that are supportive of teaching creativity to young people. So that's an important part of your life too, is to kind of pass this along.
It is, and it's also just so much fun. Occasionally we'll do a show where we'll have a group of kids from a local school or from a local music program come and sing a couple of songs on stage with us. Hmm. And anywhere from like maybe 10 to 25 kids come up. And usually it's somewhere between the ages of 8 and 10. And they are so adorable and just so talented and so open. And, you know, they haven't been shut down by feeling like, oh, I can't sing as good as this guy, or I can't do that. They just have this wonderful joy of singing a song, and I'm going to sing it at the top of my lungs, and it's so fun. And it's just really a contagious kind of joy.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're really teaching creativity in the schools as, you know, as well as we could. So thank you for introducing it again and making it a part of this curriculum.
Well, I think so much that, you know, it depends on the teachers and what they're allowed to do. And mm-hmm. back when I was having music classes at my school, my teachers basically had full control over what the curriculum was. And they chose to introduce us to these great old songs, and along with other pieces as well. I mean, I remember singing songs by the group Chicago and thinking, man, this is modern. It's great. And, you know, I always hope for the teachers that they get to, sort of like a radio person, when radio people get to tune in with their own audience and they know what to feed them and they know what songs are going to make them happy rather than it just being programmed and said, this is how it has to be. These are the top 10 songs and you can only play these. So you know what I mean?
I do. And certainly today's interview with you and conversation has just been wonderful. It's been really free ranging. We've had such a great time together and I could talk to you forever, Susie. And so
come to Leesburg.
We'll
have a backstage talk.
I will be there. You can bet I will be there. I love going to the Tally Ho and I'm going to look forward to seeing you. And if your fans want to find out more about, you know, kind of what you're doing, because I think you're working on a new album right now, really, of some original music. Isn't that right?
Well, I am, but I have a surprise announcement I'm going to make in about 2 weeks.
Great.
And it's not about that record. It's a different record, which we're just right now putting the finishing touches on. So I can't scoop you, but I will be able to tell you by the Tally Ho. We'll definitely be announcing that night. So
that's great. Well, we'll look forward to that announcement. We'll look forward to seeing you, hearing more from you. Maybe we can do a sing-along there at the Tally Ho with you.
But we'll do it.
Great. Susie Boggs, thank you so much. Susie's going to be at the Tally Ho Theater on May 28th. I know you've got more tour dates, and so all of your fans that want to know more, they can find out at susieboggs.com, right?
That's right, and you can go in there and put your zip code in the mailing list, and I'll send you a note when we're coming close to you, so send you a little email. Like I say, I don't have to write the postcards anymore, but I still write the notes.
Well, we will put a link to that in the show notes for everybody, and you'll find out more information. But Susie, thank you. What a pleasure it's been to talk to you. Just charming.
Thank
just
you.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you, you know, hooking people up with the Facebook celebration we're doing, too. That's going to be fun. And they can, if they go in there and like my page,
yeah,
that would be very nice.
Hard not to like you, Susie. And we'll, by all means, we'll direct as many people there as possible.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul. And I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Yep. I will see you on the 28th.
Okay.
Thanks, Susie.
Okay. Take
Bye.
Care.
You too. Bye.